Surely when Professor Wim Eisner asked his colleague, "Do you know someone who likes golf and is interested in getting involved with Edgar?" even he could not have imagined that he would strike gold with an affirmative reply. How about me? So often behind the scenes, Professor Hans Arensen has played a major role in the development of Edgar and the respect that the body commands today. Hans recently stepped down from the board to spend more time with his wife Sabine and grandchild, and to put in a few more hours on the golf course. His commitment to helping people with a disability get involved in golf and to achieve far more for themselves by playing the game is clear, as is his desire to create a fair and robust minimum impairment criteria. It is a subject that can be complex, but ultimately, says Hans, it is simply about the severe disadvantage on the golf swing as a result of balance, power, range of motion, or hand-eye coordination. In my conversation with Professor Hans, he demonstrates a scalpel-like sharpness on the key issues, understands that although much has been done, there is still much to do, and that he considers the work of Edgar with the national federations and international bodies essential. It is my pleasure to have worked with Hans over the last 5 years and to learn about a subject that was frankly beyond my comprehension. I hope that you pick up some words of wisdom from Professor Hans Arensden. It's very good to speak to you, Hans, and what I'd like to do is I'd like to go through a little bit of a life story, really, I suppose, and if you could tell me a little bit about yourself and also your career up to date, would be great.
Start with my professional background as a medical doctor and specialized in rehabilitation medicine. That is very much involvement in physical disabilities and impairments and disabilities. And so my specialty is looking in possibilities for people who are feeling and living with the constraints of impairments. So it's, in that respect, it's a positive part of medicine where people really are learning, and we learn them how to use their abilities instead of focusing on their disabilities. I've been trained in the Netherlands. I've been working also in the Caribbean as a general practitioner, and after my specialization I worked in three academic hospitals, and my last appointment was a professorship in Leiden University from 2013, and in that year I was retired from daily practice and from university appointment. Well, I'm still appointed by the university, but not in a clinical position. Well, next to that, my love for the game of golf is already from my student years. I played a couple of years golf. Then for almost three decades, I hardly played. And then in my late 50s, I came back to the golf course and got heavily involved in club golf and competitions. And there also starts my involvement in Edgar. So interest in golf and some knowledge about physical disabilities. And you know Wim Eisma, of course.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, he was my tutor during my specialization. We worked together for about 20 years. And he was involved in Edgar since the early days, and somewhere in 2010, I think, contacted me. We were at a reception, one of our colleagues, and he said, "Do you know maybe someone who is interested in getting involved in Edgar, in golf for people with a disability?" And I said, well, maybe I am. And he said, "Well, that is great." And so that was my first appearance. Well, my first appearance was actually in Malmö in 2011. There was an Edgar meeting, and we met there. You were there.
I remember it well because I had no involvement with Edgar at that time. And I do some work for the Ryder Cup European Development Trust on some applications. And yes. I remember at the time that Well, actually, a little bit before that, we'd been approached to see if we could support the PGAs of Europe and the Ryder Cup Development Trust to see if there was a way that we could support a tournament. And unfortunately, that wasn't possible because of the rules of the trust. But we went back to Edgar at the time and said, well, maybe there's something else we can do, and let's see if we can figure out a way to do it. And I remember at that meeting in Malmo that we were there with a group of specialists, specialist educationalists, and also specialists in the area of disability sport, to try and build a framework for a coaching program to coach the coaches on how to coach golf and how to make it aware to people with disability. So, yes, I do remember that. And, 2011, it's time flies,
Well, I remember I was, for the first time, my first appearance. And, of course, Peter was there and Wim. They were the people who really brought me into. And I learned from the hard work Peter has done. And they had done a lot of work for the bid book for the Paralympics for 2016. And so there was a lot of discussion, and basically the discussion was about it started with the discussion about classification, because one of the reasons, and we didn't know all the arguments at that time, was that golf had his performance handicap system, and this performance handicap system was supposed to be the best system to classification in also in disability golf, and that should have been enough for IPC. Well, it wasn't. And at that time, we looked at the definitions of impairment, and there were lacking a lot of there were a lot of uncertainties and gray areas. So definitions at that time were in their early days. And I found that very interesting because of my knowledge of movement and my interest in doing research in movement disorders. And I saw all the equipment that was being developed on several places in the world. So I had great expectations of understanding better the golf swing and also the constraints on the golf swing by several impairments. And there we started, and you remember we had this meeting also in the Netherlands where we started the task force on the Paralympic classification process, and that was in 2012. And so over the years that has been, one of my involvement in EDCA was focused on two processes, two projects. And first of all was the definitions. And we had a couple of meetings. We have been in England in 14. We have been in The Hague in 15. And we had a meeting in the Czech Republic with a number of members of the medical committee. And ever since 2015, we have a stable and well-defined package of impairment definitions.
Can I just ask you, Hans, for those people that are going to listen to this, could you give a kind of a layman's description of what the definitions of impairment, not what they are, but how could you summarise that in a very few words to be able to understand what the definitions actually mean and what they do? By applying the definitions, what does that actually mean to the people that are playing the game?
Yeah, well, we, and you can see this also in the new terminology from IPC. What we have done was describing what we call now the minimal impairment criteria. So we have defined the minimal impairment criteria and described the eligibility of individuals with impairments included in the golfer for the disabled. And this minimal impairment criteria describe what is included and what is not. And to give you an example, for amputations, it is clear cut, a complete foot amputation makes the player eligible, but a partial foot amputation does not. A complete hand amputation does, but a few fingers may, but may not. not. And the number of fingers and the levels have been described in our definitions, and so becomes minimal impairment criteria. For example, pain is not inclusion factor. So people who suffer pain from joints that are arthrotic, for example, and pain in itself is not an eligibility criterion. And you need more, and that is range of motion, loss of power. And the loss of power and the grade of loss of power is also defined in the definitions.
I seem to remember you saying to me some time ago, you had a very simple, I think it was probably a two-liner or maybe even a three-liner, which was around about an impairment that affects hand and eye coordination. And so, I mean, you used that and you also talked about movement as well. Can you remember more or less what that would be? I think it was a very simple description that you gave.
The essential part is, and now we're talking about physical disabilities, and those are the impairments that interfere with a normal golf swing, and that can be the result of loss of body parts, that can be the result of severe impairment in balance, in power, range of motion. Those are the basics of this interference in the golf swing.
And hand and eye coordination would be part of that, I guess.
Eye coordination is also part of it, yes.
So when you first got started with Edgar, what were your real hopes at that time? Can you remember?
I saw your question and I've been thinking about it. What I feel about golf for people with a physical disability is that it is a unique sport to participate in, because almost all people with a physical impairment are not able to run or to anticipate or to make fast movements, and therefore playing a team sport and on a very high level. And golf is, because it is done from a standing position, you can prepare yourself, you can make your swing, and you can play, as we all know, you can play it on a very high level, and also on all ages, from young to senior age, you can still play on a high level. And that is quite unique for a sport. And therefore, I thought, well, golf is should be more accessible to many individuals who love to play sports but have been refrained from their sports because of the things I just mentioned. And, well, then the international movement and to organize the tournaments. I strongly believe then, and I still do, that to make a sport more popular, better accessible, and more interesting for many people, also for those people who never came up in their mind to play, just to see how people with the same or comparable disabilities play it. And that is the international platform, and that is a Paralympic top sport. And so I strongly believe then. And we had a discussion, of course, with Peter when the first bid book was not accepted, the application was not accepted. Yeah, that was the time I came into Edgar, and I strongly believe this was the route to go. And I know it was a long one, but that was the aim, and it was my aim to participate.
So when you started working with Edgar then, what did you find that the major issues were, or the barriers or the challenges that you had to overcome? And were there any particular things that really you felt as though were keeping you almost like in a straitjacket?
That was, at that time, it was in a group of enthusiastic amateurs who putting an awful lot of effort in organizing tournaments. And the group we worked with was excellent, was marvelous, very hardworking, and doing to the best of their knowledge. Well, I said already, the definitions were incomplete, were disputable, and so the first few years we put a lot of effort in making definitions, and therefore the minimal impairment criteria, better understandable, better explainable to players. And at the same time, we were working within the medical committee, sometimes with success, but also a number of failures, to do better what we called classification, but in not really classification, but observing, doing the assessments on eligibility. And so the group in the medical committee grew, and we had very good professionals coming to the team, and they did their work at a good level. But it was not well spread in Europe. There were also individuals who had their, their private agenda. And there were the personal interests of many disabled golfers, and I mean with personal interest, that they were just fighting for their own group and sometimes also fighting for their personal interests and not the group of individuals with a disability to bring together. And so we talk about disappointments, but I've seen more of those individuals in the past 6, 7, 8 years. And that was also, for me, a disappointment in the group of people where all this hard work was done for.
Yeah, I mean, that must have been obviously very frustrating, but I mean, clearly there's been some good successes as well.
Absolutely. No, I fully agree. No, we, and you were able to compare, and now, as you see where EDGA stands, well, and the international awareness, the ABLE world, the ABLE golfers world is involved. The number of national member societies, member organizations that are involved in EDGA, that is a major, major difference and a major achievement. You know, you are the main exponent who has done all this international work. And that is, it is also a milestone in the way to, in the end, and a true worldwide organization that makes the disabled golf a true inclusive group in golf. But it's a long way.
It's a long way, we know, and certainly we've had the benefit of building on something that is already well established, and you know, some of the work of the original founders of EDGA. Clearly, if that work hadn't been done, then we would have had no opportunity to move the association forward in the way that it has. But so the word standing on the shoulders of giants always a great term as far as I can see, because you know, we obviously build any success that we may well have on the back of other people's success that they, you know, the hard work that they've done. But just to go back to perhaps some of the things that you think will be the major work for EDGA going forward, and I would probably put that especially relating to the definitions of impairment, classifications, maybe anti-doping, that kind of thing. I mean, what areas do you think we really need to get involved in over the next few years and to take this forward?
In my opinion, in my vision, there is, without a solid scientific-based classification system, there is no world platform, there is no Paralympic involvement. And maybe we can come into on the base of lower limb amputations. But that is only a group, and I fully agree with you that this all-inclusive needs a well-based classification system to really have all inclusive and also in competition with each other. Because what I see now is that we will, if we don't have this classification system, we will have maybe 5 or 6 or 7 handicap groups that compete with each other. And that is the amputations, and that is the wheelchairs, and that is the blind, and the disadvantages, the interference of the impairment have to be better monitored and better defined and better measured in the future. So everybody can have a performance handicap and plus or minus strokes based on their classification. And that will help to make them really inclusive. And if we don't, then we will end up with the discussion of whether a wheelchair, someone with a spinal cord lesion, can be competitive with someone who has multiple sclerosis. And this kind of discussions are useless, pointless, and disgraceful.
When we go for more inclusivity, which obviously is a stated objective, Edgar, and of course from our members as well. There's a lot of areas that we don't have definitions for, and I know that they're not quite so easy, and I know there's been a lot of work that's been done to start that process to bring these definitions together. So, I mean, clearly there's many disabilities. Autism is one, post-traumatic stress disorder is another one, deaf, and so on and so forth. I mean, there's a whole bunch of disabilities out there. And I know that Edgar, a couple of years ago, put together a series of tournaments which were called Access, which allows all of these disabilities to be able to play in those events, providing that they are recognised disability in the country in which the tournament is being played. Clearly, in the future, we will need to come to the point where intellectual disabilities are another area where, you know, not quite so easy perhaps as it would be to see somebody's got an arm missing or a leg missing or they're sat in a wheelchair. How difficult is that work? And clearly, it's something that we are doing and it's something that we need to do. But how difficult is that work?
Pointing at classification, I'm convinced someone with a mental neurodevelopmental disorder can have a complete normal locomotion system, but may also have physical impairments. Those individuals that have a mental problem, and for those who are not able to participate in regular golf because of their behavioral problems, I fully understand and accept that they need, say, protected area where they can perform their sports. And that could be under the banner of Edgar. But it is a complete different issue, and from a classification point of view, they do not qualify for the disability or the impairment constraints on physical abilities. They are accepted and they are part of the game, but in the classification system, there is no constraint on their physical ability. So it is typical behavioral problem, and that should be dealt with different. That is not comparable in any way with the physical impairments.
So we have right now in Edgar, we have challenge series of events. And so those challenge series are open to any human handicap category. So it could be that the wheelchairs play a tournament just with the wheelchairs or the amputees, or potentially it could be people with autism, it could be people with intellectual disability or neurodevelopmental disorder. So that allows Edgar to look after that group of disabilities. Ultimately, obviously, there will be people that will cross that. So they will play in their wheelchair event, but they will also play in premier events, and people that are blind that will play in a blind event in the human handicap category, in a blind event, but then they would play in a premier event with amputees or with wheelchairs or any other disability. Do you see that we will be eventually able to put all of the disability groups together so that they have the choice, obviously, to be able to play in their own human handicap category tournament, or to play together in a pan-disability event? Do you think that's possible? Do you think that's something realistic? And if so, can you see that on the near horizon, or is it a long way away?
Not on the near horizon, because we don't know enough yet about the interference and the constraints of the several impairments on the golf swing. So we had in the task force, we have done a lot of preliminary studies to get a better picture, but the final steps have to be taken, and that takes many hours of observation, measurements under different conditions, and then analyze and come with clear solutions. And yes, that will give us a classification system within certain limits that help to bring all the disability groups together. And yes, I also think that we can do these measurements in people with blind golfers and see whether tools, these measurement techniques, can identify constraints on their golf swing because of the blindness. And if not, there's no problem. Then they can compete, but they have their classification together with lower limb amputees, the below the knee amputees, because we need a sort of a standard. That is the standard. And from my observations over the last decade, I think that the amputees below the knee have the best or the less interference from their physical impairment compared to all the others.
I guess you've seen quite a big improvement in some of the play over the years since you first got started.
So absolutely.
I've only got a couple more questions for you, Hans. But one of them, how do you see the whole sphere of golf for the disabled developing over the next few years?
Well, as I said, there might be two ways of developing. One way is to make the groups and the interest, not only in Europe but worldwide, the special groups more interesting, so then the handicap groups are playing together. And the other side is to get all disabilities and also in the future together with able bodies on the same level, on the same tournaments. And now you see already that in my country, but also you have seen that people with a disability play also in their own club competitions, and that is possible. And if we have a classification system that has a reference to the handicap system, and we can add, for example, Peter, he's playing one-handed left, and from our measurements, he has a performance handicap. But then from the measurements, he gets one or two or three strokes extra because of that makes him more competitive to the able body. And maybe for many people, more interesting to have their participation in competition.
Is there any area that we've not touched on that you'd like to discuss today?
Well, yes. From the very beginning, you were mentioning that from the PGAs of Europe, we're setting up a training for golf professionals to be involved in players with a physical impairment. And to my knowledge, this has been acknowledged, but the number of teaching professionals, in my country at least, that have been interested and involved in training specific people with a physical handicap has not grown on an interesting base. There are a few. I don't know how it is in other countries, but that is maybe another part where we could put in some more emphasis. And while we do it here in the rehabilitation centers, we are working also with the National Golf Federation just to promote and teach golf professionals on a better base. But internationally, I would have preferred to have more golf professionals involved in the work of EDCA at this very moment.
I think it's an interesting comment that you make, an interesting point. And I think that with the golf professionals that have gone through the training, I think they actually see that golf for the disabled is in fact an interesting commercial opportunity. Not only is it the right thing to do and socially correct, but it is also a commercial opportunity. With, according to the World Health Organization, there's 15% of Europe that is disabled. That's a cool 110 million people that mm-hmm. are disabled. And if we were to just take a very small fraction of 1%, let's say half of 1%, we're over 500,000 people in Europe alone that may well be golfers in the future. And that's an interesting market. It's an interesting market for the industry. That's more shoes, it's more clubs, it's more green fees, it's more trolleys, it's more buggy hires, it's more memberships, it's more federation fees. And so I think that perhaps a little bit like it would be in many other things. We talked about this being in 2011. The first conversations about this were in 2011. And really, it probably didn't get started until, let's say, end of 2013, beginning of 2014 as a program that was being delivered. So effectively, we're only talking about maybe 3 or 4 years. And I think the professionals that have been through those programs, and there is those programs in many countries. GB and I know have a very good program. We have this program that goes into other countries. Australia's got a good program. There's a number of places that have these, but it's a relatively new thing. It's 3 to 4 years. And so there's not yet a kind of a movement. And I think that as more and more golf professionals recognize the commercial opportunity, that they will see that person with disability, their money's just as good as anybody else's to coach. The clubs will realize that as well. There's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of euros, yen, dollars. It's actually millions, not hundreds of thousands, that go into developing junior golfers. And yet there's a population there of 110 million people in Europe alone that are disabled and potentially could be a golfer in the future. So I think to a large extent, it will gather momentum. I agree with you. Perhaps it's something that we need to promote a little bit more. I know that in many of the basic education programs now in PGAs, there is at least discussion about coaching disabled players. So I do think that is a change, and it definitely wasn't there 4 or 5 years ago. It is now there. I think we're beginning to gain some traction in that area. But certainly there's a lot more that can be done. And your point about rehabilitation therapists, I think, is not only very correct, but I think it's also very timely, because in the upcoming tournament that will take place in Portugal in the end of November, there will be a training which will be open for rehabilitation therapists, physiotherapists, personal trainers, physical education teachers. These people will be given a similar kind of training, an awareness training, if you like, about the opportunity of golf. And I see it again very much in the same way as it was only a few years ago. I know when I started to play golf, which was back when the earth was cooling in 1972, but I was the only person at school that played golf. It was not on the menu of sporting options to play golf when you were in school. Now, of course, it is in many schools. And I think it's very much the same way in rehabilitation centres and hospitals and physiotherapy units that golf for the disabled is just not on the menu. It's not possible. And so therefore, we have to make it, we have to get it onto that menu of sporting options. And it's a very good sporting option, incidentally, as you alluded to earlier. So, yeah, exactly. I agree that there's much more that we need to do in that area.
Sure, golf has so many advantages for all kinds of individuals, improve their activity level, to improve their balance, to improve their, not in the least, their social abilities. So it has many advantages. There is one more thing I want to mention, and that is the ideas about organizing the medical committee. I've seen your paper, and what you're suggesting is to have a small medical committee. And next to that, working groups that are focusing on these different disability groups. From a practical point of view, I agree, because you need a small group that is really doing things and make things working. On the other hand, to have these different working groups, you can see that they have also, again, their special interests. And I believe that within the medical committee, the sharing of knowledge and also sharing the differences between the groups is very important for the learning process of the medical committee. It is not necessarily impossible, but it's on the other side, not necessarily supportive for this inclusive idea, and the risk of having these working groups diverging from each other is there. But maybe I'm too pessimistic for that.
Where we currently sit with committees in general, and this is not necessarily with the EGGA committees, it's with all kinds of committees, they sometimes can become a little bit unwieldy, with lots of people, lots of good information, of course, and I think all committees normally are made up with people with very good intention and with very good knowledge. We have to put people in charge of teams, and I prefer the use of teams personally, which have an overview, have the big picture, and might not even have the very specific knowledge into particular questions. And so to cut to the chase, as far as Edgar is concerned and the medical group that we have together right now, I certainly don't see the groups want to be working in silos, in isolation. I think the goal is to have the executive director responsible for the classification team, who has a very good overview of what we're trying to achieve and how we're trying to achieve it and when we're trying to achieve it by, and then put together groups which have specific interests. So perhaps, and a good example of that might be something that we received recently with Per Scholberg, who clearly have a real interest in neurodevelopmental disorder and clearly have an objective to be able to make that happen as part of Edgar. And I think that's good. And if they're brought together with maybe one or two or three or however many other people is necessary to come up with a meaningful solution and a meaningful set of recommendations, then of course they would report it and they would bring it together. At the same time, they wouldn't get bogged down with issues about which digits on a hand or a foot may well be affecting the classification or the definition of impairment of somebody who has such a condition. They would be able to focus on what their interest is, and of course then they would come up with those suggestions. And it would be the same perhaps for people in wheelchairs, where, as you mentioned earlier, there's this discussion about, is it different for somebody who perhaps has a neurological disability who's in a wheelchair, or somebody who has a spinal lesion in a wheelchair? And again, they wouldn't need to get bogged down in issues of neurodevelopmental disorder. I think they're much more effective and much more able to deal with the question that's in front of them. But then, of course, I think they have to come together. But there would be one spokesperson for that group, that working group, that will come together with the executive director for the classification team, the secretary for it, and maybe one other. And then they can come together and see how the whole thing fits together. We have a similar situation in my work, in my day-to-day work, where we have people that are really interested on the committee that I work, that are very, very interested in the education of golf professionals. We have others that are very interested in the qualifications of golf professionals. And we have others that are very interested in the coaching that golf professionals deliver. And they are really, they're three different things. They're totally, totally, totally interlinked. There's many, many points of crossover, but at least they can come together with their ideas, and then we can find out what points of conflict have we got, where the crossovers are. That's my hope, and that's what we hopefully will make happen.
I can see the advantages, of course. There is a risk. I just can see, and maybe it's not necessary to see it as a risk.
I think it's a wise comment, and it's certainly something that I'm aware of and you know, will take care of.
I come to this point because I've seen over the last 7-8 years too many personal agendas. And there's a risk for the basic philosophy of bring it all inclusive. Not everybody wants this inclusiveness, particularly not within the disability groups.
I hope that you haven't seen quite so much of it over the last 3 or 4 years, but I am aware that it is there, and I am aware that it's something that we are trying to get away from, and we're trying to marginalize to a large extent those people that do have those personal agendas to the point where they become irrelevant. But I know that they're there, and I know that it's something that we've still got to work hard to make sure that we eventually stamp it out for the benefit of everybody, because our goal is to do this eventually, that golf for the disabled is just considered to be just absolutely part of the main game, mainstream game. And we know that the issues in many of these agendas are identical. And probably 80% of what is required for wheelchair golf is exactly the same as what is required for blind golf. Sure. And there will be, and the issues that they face are about discrimination, eligibility, accessibility, funding, and recognition. Yeah. There's 20% difference, which is blind perhaps don't want a ramp, whereas the wheelchairs do, and the blind, you know, the ability to have a coach with them so that they can obviously play the game, whereas the wheelchair players don't. So we understand that there's a small difference between all the disabilities. It might be 10, 15%, 20%, who knows what it is. But we know that 80% of it is exactly the same. You know, if we can work together on this, then all the better. Just to round this off, Hans, what's next for Professor Hans Arensden? So what's going to happen now in your future?
Professionally, I'm at the end of the line. I have still two PhDs I have to deliver in the next year. I'm active in my own health. I'm quite troubled with a severe hearing problem to the Meniere disease. Over the last year, I have lost a significant part of my hearing ability. That was already, it started in 2011, has nothing to do with ETCA. That makes also communication and participating in meetings more complicated. Our last meeting in Portugal last year, I noticed how difficult it was for me to follow the discussions. And so I have to step back from a number of public positions because of my hearing problem. And I'm now working with two hearing aids and with my headphones on and with communication one-on-one. It's not a problem, but when I come to a group and there is noise and people speak and not proposed sequence and they speak all together, then I'm hopelessly lost. And so that is another reason to step back from a number of these activities. I have in healthcare, I have two positions. And I have to consider also whether I will stop, yes or no. And then I have to focus on my grandchildren.
Hans, it's been a pleasure to speak with you as always. It's always nice to learn from you and to hear your opinions, which are absolutely valuable. We also appreciate that my understanding is that you're going to be available to us to help us out and help out our new application. So obviously we're looking forward to continuing to work with you. Perhaps not quite as much as we have done before, but certainly we'll be knocking on your door, I'm sure, for your experience and your knowledge.